Our elders have made every sacrifice for the preservation and for the propagation of Deen. Initially, in the 1857, they had fought the English at Shamli, and they had seen the wrong. So basically, there were two wrongs. In the English recorded history, history that is recorded by the English, is between 1875 and 1900, approximately 25 million Indians had died because of starvation. Mainly starvation, maybe other reasons. So how the starvation came about? At that time in India, people lived off the fields. So that was enough good to sustain them. But now, the English had taken control, and all the fruit of the labor was sent to Europe. Much of it was wasted, and all was sent to Europe. Now these people's hard labor were all sent away. So that was one way how they had killed, destroyed. Now this is recorded in their history. Then the second thing that they had done around that time was to gain control over the education. Now, to the normal person, that education may seem to be very important, because this is how he feels that this will sustain my life. My children, they'll get some job, they will be quite secure. That's how the normal person feels. So he'll try his best to get his child admitted to the school. Why? Because he feels otherwise, there's no hope for this child being able to sustain himself. That's how he feels. So from the very beginning, they will admit the child into the school. But now, what they would do, they would use the same curriculum or the system of the school to brainwash the child. So I remember, up till the 60s, I can remember very clearly, the prayer that was read in the assembly every morning without fail, was the opening prayer of the Bible. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, give us this day our daily bread. So, all right, at home they would tell us that we mustn't repeat these words. Words aren't right. But now, you're listening to these words every day, so in a person like me also, that thing sunk. That I could preserve that, right? What is that indoctrination? See, so one was killing and wiping out 25 million Indians, and then slow indoctrination. So they indoctrinated in three ways. One was through this prayer of the morning, because at that time the child's mind is the best and most fresh. Right? Then the second thing I noticed, right? So now you're in grade one. Right? In grade one at that time, there was still segregation. Boys would sit on one side and the girls would sit on the other end. And as we moved on to, that time we were standard 2, standard 3, then everything got mixed up. Now, it's an inquiring mind, why did they do this? At that time when we were small, we didn't think much about it, because at that small age, you don't have those feelings. You don't have the feelings In fact, you will feel disgusted being attributed to a girl. So you feel disgusted at that time. So, but then it plays in your mind, but what was the need for them to integrate when that segregation was going on well? What was the need? Then when we came to about standard 5, or the grade 7, grade 6, now then they introduced music. Now, it's all perturbing, perturbing news. They made us all go and make a collection for a piano to be played in the school. Give some coupons, go and sell these things here, and must contribute towards this. Whatever happened, happened. So that was the second infiltration. So it makes you think, why was this, why was this done? One was, they got in Christianity. Then the second thing that they got was entertainment. It's entertainment, but entertainment with a level of indecent behavior, immorality. You see that? Now they know that when it's immoral behavior, indecent behavior, that every person takes to it. Right? And the beginning readers was the Jack and Jill went up the hill. Right. See how indoctrination, slow indoctrination, but this is a shaitanic type of indoctrination. Right. So what was the need for doing this? Then I remember in the music class, one of the first songs that they taught, right? I'm a music teacher now, you know, the music notes. So he'll show these hands, and he must go high, go low, all that, right? All these things are in my mind. So now, the first song that they taught us at that school, right? They told us a song that wasn't singing, all that, but at that time, people didn't know the harm of this thing. They thought it was something innocent and they carried on. But the first song that was taught was about a love thing. Fell in love and how they were loving and all that. And dating, right? So now, can you see now that small impressionable mind, what things are going into that mind? Making love is normal. And this is the way to go. And one of the second, third songs that they taught, right? I can still remember the words. When I was young, my father said, "Son, you must be a bachelor boy, and that's the way to go." Now, my notes, Muzammil was doing the Urdu of it, right? So, I was surprised to see that there was a song exactly the same words in Urdu. Can you see what's going on? Now, had I not seen this, I would have said, well, it's one of those things that came up here. But now I saw exactly the same words when I was young, Jabme Javanta, or Mere Pita Ne Yukaha. Exactly the same words, exactly the same words, but a translation in English, in Urdu. Right? So what was the need for them to do all these things? If you say it was just literature, why in every song there is something about it? Then I'm noticing now, right, I didn't go to metric, right? Deliberately, I saw this is all around standard 7, 8, after this is all scrap here. So repetitions of things here, and just scrap, so I just left it. To write my parents a letter that, you know, thing here, I don't feel comfortable. Alright, I was in Myasam at that time, so they accepted my excuse. But anyway, you're going to matric now, and they're teaching you, that time they used to call it a set book. So that was literature. So, in English they will impress on three things, right? I'm talking about those days, I don't know after that what happened, right? One is, you must get the spelling right. You must get the spelling right. So, you know, staff meeting, so there was a complaint that the children cannot spell right. So I retorted, I said, what's so important in getting the spelling right? There is a need to get a tajweed right. You got that right, then you got everything. But you didn't get the spelling right, like how people write, you know, this computer language and all that. So if you didn't get that right, so what's the big deal about it? It's not a big deal if you didn't get the spelling right. Yeah, you can read right, you can got the tajweed right. That's an important thing. This way he expressed himself. All right, maybe he didn't spell right, right? So, but you understand what he's talking about. But now, the bad thing is this. There is a person from India or Pakistan, right? He's talking English, right? Or from one of the black African countries, right? So he may not be able to get the pronunciation right. And now we make a joke. So that though English became the standard, and the person can't speak and communicate, then he is second class. He must be able to pronounce it, right? That became the standard. You see what importance we give to it, spelling. So I can still remember in those days, now 90s, right? So someone would try and imitate an Indian and tease him. See? So we will say, come quickly, right? Now these people, it takes them time to get the pronunciation. So they will say, come quickly. So now they'll make a joke of it, right? But they don't realize what they have done in the whole process is they have given English an importance. So what's so important about the English? What's so important about it? Yes, alright, he must be able to communicate, it's enough, sufficient. But give that type of importance, get the pronunciation right, get the spelling right, and apart from that, you can only pass the exams if you pass English. So much of importance to language. See the level of importance. And then, if a person can express himself well, then you say he's an educated person. If he can't express himself well, he's not educated. So all the importance just at the language. So the three things they emphasized on. One was a spelling, right? And the second, I'm just talking from my memory now, that what importance they gave, right? They had a subject like comprehension. So they are given one passage, read it, and on that passage they'll ask some questions. So they want to see, have you comprehended that passage well or not? Can you answer the questions correctly? So that was the second thing. Right? So one was spelling, one was comprehension, and the third one, if I remember, was how well you can write. You ask your composition, right? Right. And now in that composition, you must give good words, very good words. Right. So one friend of mine, someone mentioned his name is late now. Right. So he says that he wrote some composition, right? So the teacher wrote a comment. The comment was, this is a conglomeration of disjointed facts. Now, in Urdu it says, ye to aapki baat bejor hai. But now you see the high words he used. What? It's a conglomeration of disjointed facts. But you see that the impress. That's the thing that hurts me. They gave that level of importance to the language, right? Now, I must understand what goes, how this whole machinery, how it works. See, in Urdu they say, Jiski lati uski bhes. The equivalent of that in English is might is right. Well, the might is right. And the equivalent of that in Arabic is by Ibn Khallakun, right? He's a historian, right? So he says, he has seen now all the history in the back and he saw the narrative. What was the narrative? Based on the narrative, he'll give a statement. He says, Ad-deenu ala, an-nasu ala deeni mulukim. You see? An-nasu ala deeni mulukim. So now, if you look internationally as though it is an American, British rule, right? Everywhere, where you go. But it's their influence. That influences languages, everything. They influence, right? So when they influence everything, then at some level you want to conform with them, with their standards. Now, the more than the average person, what is the attire? Is it a Eastern Muslim attire, or is it an English and a Western attire? Al-Nasu ala dini muluki. Can you see? See how they influence it, right? They influence your clothing, right? Then they influence your food also. Kentucky, that type of culture, eat out. Where this thing is coming from? Where is it coming from? It's coming from there. Now, boys will go for proposals. Now they call it the samosa run, right? So, amongst the questions that are asked in the samosa run, and do you go out for eating? So you have culture. To the extent, right, that Allah Pak forbid us, protect us and our children, they're going to have sari in one of those eating out restaurants. Now, can you imagine now sari, in what state you are at that time? Then at sari time, you want to read a few rakats, right? Make some dua. Now your whole mind is about dress up so that I can go to that shop and we can eat there. The people will say, you know, what a beautiful thing you've done. See now how the whole mind got warped. Now look at this mind, then look at the mind of people of deen, right? As the Shaykh Alhamdulillah says, that now they encouraging the children to keep rosas at the age of 5, 6, 7, 8, right? So a novelty at that time in his family was that special tea that they would make. So they'll only give you the tea if you perform 2 or 4 rakats of tahajjud. But I see how that tahajjud get connected to the tea. So what's in the mind? I must read that I can be eligible to this. But see the indoctrination here, and see this indoctrination, your clothing, your outer appearance, right? Your food, the culture, and now, in that food also, you can't call it food. See, so one of the main diets will be like a burger, right? Now that burger, what it is, sometimes, you know, if you go and examine the whole thing, it's about 1-2 years meat, it was frozen, right? So, it's made into a patty, right? And the patty, they'll put a lot of fat. Why? So that it'll give it the smell, right? When you are putting it on the toaster, right? It'll give the smell, right? But the smell is too important for you. So then, you just buy a bun, put a patty, put it onto the toaster, put some veg, whatever, tomatoes, whatever, and mayonnaise, and that's the meal. Now, which khane ki cheez hai? Is that a food? Is that the meal? Right? The meal is now contains all natural, fresh, good products, healthy products. Right? That's a meal. And the whole culture has changed from this to this type of food. So your food is gone. And you feel proud already. Now we had burgers and a pizza. And what is a pizza? My brother, he reads up all these articles, all these things he used to read up. See, the pizza is in an English home in the old days, what it used to be. So all the leftover food of the week, they put into a, have a base, put all the leftover in that. Give it a nice colorful look, right? Now that used to be a pizza. Now that became a pizza shop. See from where the whole culture changed. But see how they indoctrinating you from your food, your clothing, right? Then your get together, socializing, all that, right? So in that socializing also, you must have some type of an English Western flavor. You are a dini home or no dini home, but there must be some type of an English flavor, right? So you can say, you can count at least 30, 50, 60% of people, they must have some type of a resemblance to an English marriage, right? Walking the bride on the aisle, is it something of our culture? It's an alien thing, it's a kuffar thing, right? But now, the Muslim will feel, oh, I must do it, because that's the in thing. But now, how will he change it? But now, when he's walking the bride on the aisle, then, in place of playing the music, he'll play the qiraat. You know, what a good Muslim person. What a qari sahab and the qari sahab. But you see what's going on here. Can you understand what's going on? The whole mind, the mentality is getting all corrupt. The whole mind. So Islam must be just like a cover, like a front. And then in that, anything, whatever, just give an Islamic front. Now that's why you find a lot of ulama are feeling very uncomfortable. Someone will voice it, someone will not voice it, but they will feel uncomfortable. Now, one thing, and the second thing, and the third thing, have to give in, right? Just because they are doing it, so therefore we have to do it, right? We saw now the early 60s, right? Then I don't remember seeing a Muslim woman driving. I can't remember in that period a Muslim woman going to work, right? I don't remember, right? There may have been, but a Muslim woman working, yes, you would see non-Muslim Tamils, Hindus, and their women are teachers, right? But you would hardly find a Muslim woman as teaching. I don't say you won't, but you won't listen, you won't hear about it, right? Or working in the office, doing business, etc. You will hardly find any woman doing this type of thing. Now this culture then ate into us. Now you will get now from the members, you know, you must educate your daughters as well. If something happens then, now that's the card, see. That's the card that is played. If something happens, kuch ho jaye to phir, see. Now they're not educating the people that how is the girl supposed to be brought up, what are the duties, right? Who's responsible, right? In Islam, the responsibility before marriage is the father's, right? Father's responsibility for the girl, mainly for the girl. Father is fully responsible, right? Then, with marriage, then the responsibility is the husband's, right? Then in the case of death or divorce, then the responsibility is wal warithi mislu dhalik. In the event, right, if this girl has to die, hypothetical, right, then who's responsible? Wal warithi mislu dhalik. So whoever would have been the girl's heirs, they are responsible proportionate to their shares. So you are, say, one half of the shareholder, so you must. So nobody talks about this. But they say, if something happened then, but if something happened, the Quran Sharif has got a structure already. Are you talking about the structure? Or are you talking about the English now? See, that English has ate into yourself so much that you feel that you should be doing that. And you forgot what the Quran Sharif has said. Can you see the culture, how it corrupted your mind? If something happens. That means now, they created a mind that you mustn't assume responsibility for a girl, your aunt, your sister, your mother. You mustn't assume responsibility, and each one has to fend for himself. See that mind that they have created, and then you bought into that culture. Can you see the corruption? Right. What has happened? Right. What the Quran Sharif is saying, wa alal warithi mislu dhalik. Right. That's it. No. What you found conveniently is to send them out into the schools to educate themselves. And the unfortunate thing is that you even got scholars coming onto the screen and crying, say, please, brothers, send your daughters to this university, please, crying and saying it. Imagine now. And I ask you now, is it fair to the Quran Sharif? You left the Quran Sharif. Arahti azu alaykum min Allah lawla rahtuka la rajamnak. So he says, wattakhastumu wara'akum zihriya. You took the Quran Sharif and you threw it back. So what you're impressing upon the persons, this is the culture. And this culture says that you must educate. You must educate now what happens to this girl here. Can you see what's going on? But it's a very slow indoctrination process. And you're seeing the whole world getting caught up into this. Oh, I remember, we were living in Reunion now, you know. In 1967, 68, we moved from there to Silver Beach, right? So, the culture was very simple, very, very simple. A lot of modesty and shame, right? lot of modesty and shame to us. I can remember that time, right? Though they didn't know about abaya and all that, but there was a lot of modesty and shame, much more than what you see today. So the family home was like a get-together. All Muslim women, this side, that side, everybody will come here. They'll make some panchayat, whatever, and they'll go, right? So one woman, I don't know the actual name, but we used to call her Jara Kala. She was a little bit healthy, so we used to call her Jara Kala. So she came to announce the news, you know. She is celebrating and she is over the moon. Say, you know, my daughter, matric fail ho gayi. Now that was a thing about praise, you know, just matric. With the pass or fail, she doesn't know what it means. My daughter, matric fail ho gayi. But you see that culture, how deep it went. All your culture went out, this alien culture, so you must come out of the house. The woman must come out of the house. By Padiya Rahmatullahi, before he passed away, so there was an article, I can't remember now, Business or Economist, some popular, you know how you get this, Economist, you remember that? Yeah. So that thing came out in 1991-92. He passed away 98, right? So now, one fair-minded Englishman, fair, you get amongst them, Laysul Sawa, you get them that are very very honest, right? But he couldn't hold it. When he couldn't hold it, he wrote a whole article, The Economist published it, right? Around 92, right? I can't remember the exact dates. But he published the whole thing. So in that he says, 92 now, see, 93. So from then till now it's already 30 years, over 30 years, right? He says, you see, the biggest obstruction on our program is the Muslim and Islam. In different words, so we got that thing now. So difficulty, we got the thing from Muhammad Salih from Phoenix. So we asked someone to just make it brief, because now he's talking that, you know, very high English and the same thing, you know, it's a conglomeration of disjointed facts. So in a very, in that style he's doing it, right? But now someone has bring into easy language and make it for public consumption. So there again, he says that the main obstacle on our path is this Islamist, right? So then how to destroy them? The first thing he says that this halal haram thing must get out of it, right? So give it a color of Islam, halal, banking and all that, and instead of writing bank, say al-bank, so that you will give an Islamic color, right? And to make it more looking more halal, what must do, must put on child and his father, and they're both walking with a tasbih, so now al-bank becomes halal. See, the color that they will give, the front they will give, will impress any Muslim. Muslims say, no, man, this is right. See, they're so considerate. They were all bank they got there. So see that the whole business about cover, give a cover, that cover will then indoctrinate people. See. So get the halal and haram thing. And I was surprised, you know, I read that article and I was surprised. Is this a fact or is it something? Then we had Mona Ayub Chotri Kachwi, Ayub Kachwi Sab, Ahmad Barakatun. He's the head of the Talimi board, the Jusa, right? He's the head. So he was here. So he says, you know, this Bosnia trouble that was taking place. So they were doing some relief work. They had to charter one plane. So there was about 20 or 30 passengers. And next to him was a rabbi. And the rabbi is saying, Molana, say, we know your deen more than you know. We know it better than you know. We know, he's telling Molana, that we know that the divine help is with you, right? We know that divine help is with you. And there's no two ways about it, right? But now, we have to then delay the process. See, the process of the help of Allah Ta'ala will come to you, but you have to delay it. So what we have thought of how to delay the process is mix the issue of halal and haram. Just open a bank with an Islamic name. Well, I was surprised after that, around 90s, there was one person that came here from one of the popular banks, you know, how you get Absa, West Bank and all that. So he's had a tie and a badge here. He's the director of the Islamic bank, right? So he came to see me, had his, all his logos and all that here, all that, right? So off the cuff, I asked him, can you give me the definition of riba? Angyas, I don't know it. But how do you become a director? You're supposed to be a director advising people on halal and haram, but you don't know the basic definition of riba. He doesn't know it. So it doesn't seem that these people, Islam or Musliman, ki khair khayun ke dil mein hai hi nahi. It's just about the money. So whatever will give, so just a front. See, here just a front. Now it will see him like that. So that was the first thing he says, that we'll corrupt you people with halal. So what is asking, we all got it from. He's asking this, Marakashu is asking, this Jew, where you got this from? So you got it from your books. What is surprised now, how you got it? He said, isn't that there's an incident about Hajjaj bin Yusuf? And Hajjaj bin Yusuf had seen that any leader that is coming in, if he's corrupt and he's a tyrant, he's getting wiped out. And then he learned, and he's got his men, right? Someone, they have to just, their whole idea is hukumat karna, see. Fazlur Ahmad used to say, the English have learned, have mastered the way to rule. Not to do justice, not to take care, no, no. What will secure us and keep us in position? What must we do? It's like a chess game, right? So what we must do, how must we play it that we remain in power? Whether we are delivering, not delivering, just, not just, killing, destroying, that's secondary. What we need to ensure that we are, the rule is with us. That's how. So we got it from Hajjaj bin Yusuf. How you got it, you know, Hajjaj saw that any person is coming in and he's getting wiped out. Somehow he's destroyed. So they traced it and they saw that there was a group of pious people. If any tyrant came in, they made dua against him and that person was wiped out. So now, when Hajjaj came onto the seat, what he did, all those pious people that were doing all this, he called them, invited them. Fed them nicely, I don't know for how many days he invited them. And thereafter he told them, see, now I'm not afraid of you. Because I fed you properly with haram. Now that I fed you with haram, your du'as are going to get rejected. Your namaz, your du'as, everything is going to get rejected. So I'm not bothered about you. See that? Now, I'm just continuing on the same narrative. Mufti Sahab Rahmatullah was here in Palok, right? Around the 90s, early 90s he was there. Or late 80s, right? I was seated there. Umarji Sahab Rahmatullah Ali, Dr. Salman, all were there, right? So now, Umarji Sahab is asking Mufti Sahab Rahmatullah Ali, that there's so many dini activities taking place, masjids, madrasas, etc., etc., etc. But then we can't see the expected, the desired results. Not that we don't see any results, but we don't see the desired results. Why is it that so much of activity, so many graduating, but we don't see that desired results? Mustafa's answer was, uska jawab hai, lekin gale ke niche utrega nahi. I got an answer for that, but you won't be able to take this thing here. So now let's say it just clearly, say it, just say it, and we'll try to take it down, inshallah. So Musa's simple answer was by the importance of halal. That importance of halal has gone out of the system. So the normal person is more concerned about the quantity, right? The figures. That's what he's worried about. How much I've got, how much saved up. So, and he's not worried about whether it's halal, not halal. He is not concerned. What he's concerned about is the quantity. That's the primary concern of the Muslim nowadays. That you got that amount, you don't have that amount. So he says, you get this right, then when that person is being nurtured by halal, then good will come out of him. But if he's being nurtured, and nourished by haram, then haram will come out of him. There'll be fights, there'll be problems, there'll be misunderstanding, there'll be ikhtilafat. Now you're trying to work out, hey, get this thing right, get that thing right, get it. But what's the root? The root is that we mixed up all the issues. Halal and haram, we just mixed it up. Now this person is writing in The Economist in that 1991-92. So they studied the whole Islam, properly they studied the thing. And they saw now how to get this Muslim to fight. So they're not in one line. So the first thing he spoke about halal. And the second thing that he spoke about, very surprising, then he spoke about, right? He couldn't take it. Right? Then after that, see, that thing was wiped. They got no records of this article. Whoever kept it, they kept it. And after that thing, just got wiped out. The second thing was that, show them the importance of women's education and women and gender equality. Show them the importance of gender equality. And the importance of, until you take out the Muslim girl from her home into the center of the shopping center. She comes out from here, she's in the office, she's in the shopping center, she's everywhere, right? So there's no discrimination. Now they study the whole thing very, very well. See that? Where the Muslim woman was in the house, there was respect, this conformity of the Quran, قَرْنَ فِي بُيُوتِكُنَّ. Now pull her out from here and bring her right in the shop, in the school, in the university, all that, right? So that was the second thing that he explained. Now, this is now an Englishman, a Western, white person, he's writing. And he couldn't just hold it, you know. He's writing, I can't hold myself, but I need to spill the whole thing out. Right? That was, one was business, right? Second was woman, right? Third one, ulamaya. Now the third one he says is that their observation was the ulama have a control over the mass. Right? One alim should say something and that becomes the law. Right? So they have the greatest influence is of the ulama. So they can maneuver them, they can serve them. So how to break this here? The easiest way to break it is now, then divide the ulama, break them up. They mustn't learn to work together. Now I'm surprised, as I'm speaking to you, Mawlana Thamis Sahib Rahmatullah had picked this up in his age. Now this Economist thing came up, 93, but Mawlana had picked it up in his age. See this senior ulama-i kiram, Buzurgan-e-Din, a lot of time I feel, hey, just go with them, just to be safe. So, he's written the Ijma al-Fuzat, he says, ab to musalmanon ke andar istimai haisiyat mein saath mil kar ke kaam karne ki salahiyat hi khatam ho gayi. Same thing. That, let's divide them, break them up. When you break them up now, will they have that type of influence? They won't have that influence. And it's easy for that person to say, well, there's a difference of opinion, so why are you insisting so much on photography, for example? Why? There's a difference of opinion now. When there's a difference of opinion, why make such a big noise? See that? So will that alim now have the influence? He won't have that influence. But yeah, what I'm saying to you, the ulama-i kiram had come up, they came up, why? They came up because of these two reasons. One is the zulm, the tyranny, right? I explained in their records, they got it from 1875 to 1900, then 25 million Indians that had died of starvation, etc. Now, you go and trace your records and your great-grandfather coming into this country around exactly the same time. Most of the immigrants, expats came in at the same time. So what pushed them? They were quite well off there. Everything was going very well. India was known like the gold of the world, trade port. It was so prosperous. But then with all that prosperity, what pushed them to move out? Same, the zulm, right? So two things they took control of. They took control. One is the schools and education, etc., right? And number two is they did the zulm, right? The zulm that they had done, right? So now, the Shia Guru Ramtai now, they felt, hey, this is going to carry on now. And Indian population as it stands now, as it stands, is 1.6 billion. That's slightly more than the world population. More than quarter of the world population. So, then in that, you know, if you put Bangladesh, Pakistan, and Ceylon, and Burma all together with India, right, all together will be over half a billion, more than half a billion. So from this 1.6 billion, you at least are representing about one-fifth, or more than one-fifth, right? Because Bangladesh itself got about more than 200 million. Pakistan got more. This is all official records, unofficial even more, right? So all together would be more than half a billion, right? Now, how to get these people? How to get them right? How to get them, see? We got this problem here, we got that problem. They figure now what is the proper, the most appropriate effort. Call it a jihad, call it effort. Now, looking at the circumstance, because there's a subtle mental indoctrination. Because that normal Muslim person is feeling, my child, there's no future for him if he's not educated. Right? And they got the education in control. And the education has got what type of kufr elements in it. Now the child that is coming up, I look at the fatawa, you know, fatawa and the statements of our elders, the Mu'tasim Sabrani, etc. Well, as calm as they were, they are saying that if any person comes for a proposal for your daughter, and if he's educated, university or too educated, then don't just accept the proposal. Because there are good reasons to believe that his aqaida all corrupt. He's saying at that time, right? He passed away 42, right? So he's saying in his heyday. So that means over 100 years ago. They already saw the effects of that education. I ask you how many people that are seated here that hasn't gone through the process of education. How many? And how many person thinks like this, that if you don't go to the school, that you are illiterate, you are ignorant. Yes. What a huge percentage of Muslim population feel that if you haven't been to school, you don't know what's going on. See, they're so overawed. So they have to fight this whole system. The whole system had to be fought. But now, because we don't know what was on the cards, what were the agendas, how they're planning, right, to eliminate. What they wanted is that you don't have any religion, right? Before it was, the Radio 704, they had that program. In that they announced that they were asked, what's the need to have the Shakespearean language and all that, right? Because all that thing is all outdated. Nobody speaks that language. Thee and thou and betwixt and all that, right? It looked like a clown language, right, at that time. So now, what is the need to keep those type of set books? Bring some other book that's keeping with the times, right? So that person that's on the radio, he was now the head of education. And he had to spill the beans. He says, now, our intention is to create a Western, secular, Christian mentality. Western, secular, Christian mentality. That was now, in around 90s, right? Now it is Western, secular, atheist mentality. At that time it was a Christian mentality, now it's an atheist mentality. So the best way they could push this whole agenda was through education, because everybody has to go through education. When he has to go through education, then it's so easy to go and indoctrinate this person. So let's go through this way. So this was the reason for the Shaykh Rahmatullahi. So the battle today is how to save your identity in everything. Everything, maintain your identity must be distinct in every respect. How can you keep your identity distinct? Distinct. Now, one of the things that you can start off with the names, right? For example, you say I'm going for Hajj. You don't have to say I'm going for a pilgrimage. Sometimes you see the blacks talking here. Azan is going. Say, hey, in Kalingi Azan. So they also identifying with us. Right? They must identify with our ethos. Not that we identify with the ethos, we feel ashamed now for a group of Muslims here, right? Muslims was a mixed crowd, right? Right. That non-Muslim won't feel embarrassed in saying good morning, good evening. So he doesn't feel embarrassed with his culture, then why must we feel embarrassed with our culture? See, assalamu alaikum, loudly, clearly, and say the full salam. They don't feel ashamed. Then why are you feeling ashamed? But you see how they indoctrinate. Allah Akbar.